Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. The next one in the list, the one that I had to stop the previous episode before getting to, because it was such a big deal, is Curl. Curl, C-U-R-L, Curl, is a terminal-based, technically, a web browser. But hold that thought. Like, it isn't what you think. It's a web browser in the same sense that wget is a web browser. And if you have no idea what either wget or curl is, that's okay too. They're both technically web browsers, but they're non-interactive. They're non-interactive web browsers. So if you've ever used a web browser, you'll know that you open up an application, and then you're in the web browser. You are on the internet. You have access to anything starting with HTTP or HTTPS and www dot, all of those kinds of that protocol and that subdomain, that is all open to you through this web browser that is just there until you close it. There are similar applications for your terminal, such as Lynx, L-I-N-K-S, Lynx, L-Y-N-X, and Elynx, E-L-I-N-K-S, and I guess technically W3M or something like that. So I haven't used W3M. I used W3M for a long time within Emacs because there was a W3M mode or something, but I don't know that is really maintained anymore. Could be, maybe. Anyway, curl and wget, but we're talking about curl. Curl is non-interactive, meaning that you use curl so that you send curl out to the internet, it fetches what you've told it to fetch, and then it dumps that information into your terminal. Now, your normal web browser, like Firefox or Chromium, or even Lynx and Elynx, by default, what they do is they go out to the internet, fetch the information, and then interpret it for you. They render that information for you. That's their default behavior. Curl just downloads and displays raw information. Now, actually, curl does quite a lot more than that. It can handle HTTP, FTP, SFTP, IMAP, POP3, LDAP, SMB, SMTP, and more. So it isn't just like Firefox or Chromium without the rendering engine. It's that and a lot more. But it is designed to work without user interaction, and that's the key. Now, you can automate like Firefox or Chromium with various applications like Selenium and the Python libraries associated with that. Like, that is something that you can do, and it's a useful thing to do to test your UI, your user design and stuff like that, your interface design rather. But curl, I mean, it is built to be automated. It's just a command. You can tell, you can write down the commands you want your computer to run in a text file and then execute that text file as a script, and it will do things automatically without your interaction. And that can be a powerful thing. But before you get to that point, you need to kind of understand how to use curl at all. And the easiest example of that is to use it as a web browser. So, just for a moment, I don't recommend it on everyday use, but you can do curl, C-U-R-L, in a terminal, space. I like to put quotes around my URLs, so quote http://example.com, close quote, and then you might, just for brevity, pipe it to tail-in4. That'll give you the first four lines of whatever is at example.com. And what's at example.com, as it turns out, is h1, example domain, close h1. P, tag, this domain is for use in illustrative examples in documents. You may use this domain in literature without prior coordination or asking for permission, close paragraph, and so on. So that's it. That's what you get from curl when you grab example.com. What just happened? Well, what curl has done is it has used some library on the back end to decode DNS, which we talked about. I don't know whether it's using, what was that one? Lib D something. There are libraries out there that resolve DNS. So it's resolved DNS. It's figured out what you mean by example.com. And it knows what protocol to use because I included http://. So it knows to go to the internet to an HTTP port and go to whatever server is hosting example.com and then to go to the default location on that web service. The default location on a web HTTP web port is port port 80 or 8080 or whatever that server says, hey, this is where my web stuff is. The default location is index.html. I think historically hello.html. I think either of those, I could be wrong. Failing that, index.htm, failing that, index.php, something like that. There's a list out there somewhere that defines what the default locations are. But that's when you create a website, the first page that you're making is called index.html. That's where it starts. So curl has gone to example.com/index.html. Even though I didn't define that, even though it's not telling me that's what it is, we all know that failing any further instruction, if I tell a web browser to go get some information from a website, it's going to bring me back index.html. And that's what it's done. And then because I piped it through tail, I'm only seeing four lines. You don't have to pipe it through tail. You could pipe it through more or less or most, although I do recommend less, if you'll recall. So you've got a web page. Like you've just downloaded a web page through your terminal. You might notice that curl just dumps all the information that it retrieved from the internet into your terminal. Like there's no ceremony. It just spits everything that it got from the internet out into your terminal. You could, you know, if you're on a modern terminal, which I think probably most of us listening to the show probably are, then you can go with your mouse and select all of that. And you could then right click and copy and then paste it into a document or something. And then you can say, well, yes, I downloaded this file with curl. But I mean, that's a little bit clunky, and it works with example.com, which is only about 50 lines of HTML, but four lines of HTML and like 46 lines of CSS. That would work, but if it's a big long page like the index page for GNU World Order, which is just ridiculously long right now, I should probably, is that like affecting SEO or something? Probably. It's a ridiculously long page. So there is that, but example.com is short. Other pages are long. You wouldn't want to have to like scroll up and select and scroll down and keep selecting. That's just silly. So what you really would do is you do curl example.com --output and then save that to some location on your hard drive, like --output, I don't know, I'm just going to put it in my temporary directory. So --ram disk/index.html. And now if I cat --ram disk/index.html, sure enough, I see example.com. So in that scenario, you don't see the output of curl because it saves it. Well, you see a little bit of a status update. It tells you that it's retrieved 100% of your destination. It's downloaded at this speed. The time it's taken is exactly --:::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::::�::::װ::װװװװװװװװװ░:װװװ░װװ░װװ░&&:　　it'll spit out a little bit of information, but the bulk of the content that it's actually downloaded is just placed into a file on your hard drive. And you can make that, you can make it quiet with the --silent flag. So if I do curl example.com --silent --output --ram disk/index.html, then it downloads the index page for example.com and doesn't show me the progress. It doesn't give me anything. It's just, it is the action, and then it, and then I'm out of curl. I'm back at a terminal prompt, and that's it. So it just kind of depends on what you're looking for, or not looking for. Now, some files just really they just don't make sense to ever output into your terminal, or you might, you know, not want to have to define a file name every single time. Like, why do you have to say okay, curl, go get index.html from example.com and then save it as index.html. Like, why don't we just save the file as whatever it's named? That's the dash dash remote dash name flag. So curl space dash dash remote dash name and then http://example.com/, well, index.html downloads index.html as index.html. So you don't have to use the dash dash output if you don't want to, as long as you're okay with the file name that exists on the server, which may be fine. It might not. It kind of sometimes depends. But that certainly would be useful for, like, I don't know, an ISO file or a PNG file, you know, something that you would never want it to ever be output into your terminal by accident, because that would probably just spoil your terminal window. Like, you'd have to reset it, which isn't hard. You just type reset to reset a terminal. But I mean, it's just, it can be annoying. So dash dash remote dash name, if you're using curl to download stuff, you may as well just use dash dash remote dash name. If you know, otherwise you need to define the name yourself with dash dash output. And if you're downloading several files in succession, then that can become cumbersome, because then you have, I'm imagining a script where you're like, okay, here's a list of files and curl, I want you to go through those files and download them. Well, said like that, using dash dash remote dash name, then you only have to worry about the list of files to download. But if you decide, oh, I'm going to define the name of each file with dash dash output, then you have to worry about, well, giving the right name to the right file and so on. So dash dash remote dash name can be quite useful. Curl is useful for more than just going and getting a web page or an image off of, you know, from a known URL and so on. You can also list contents of a directory with curl. So let's go to, let's clear that. Let's go to curl and use the option dash dash list dash only. And then we're gonna list GNU world order dot info slash audio file, spelt with a PH because it is a little bit of a pun, and including the slash, the trailing slash. You have to include the trailing slash in this case. And that's just because of the way I have some stuff set up on the server, which, I mean, frankly, is probably so over complex. This right here is why my series is not well known. Like, the SEO on my site is absolutely just the worst. It's so funny. I mean, if I cared, I guess I'd try to fix it, but I don't care. So tell other people about GNU World Order, I guess, if you happen to meet someone who is into Linux. So let's say you're downloading something using curl and your connection drops, or you have to stop downloading for a moment to, you know, maybe you leave you know, one place, you leave work, you go home, and you get home, you want to continue downloading that file. It's a big file, so you weren't able to download it all. So you can do that with curl. You can resume a download. And the syntax for that depends. I mean, weirdly, if you happen to know the exact byte count where your download was interrupted, then you can provide that. But I think it's probably more realistic that you're just going to let curl auto detect it. So that's what I'll assume. So curl dash dash remote dash name, because we're just going to name the file the same thing as it is on the server. And then dash dash continue dash at space dash space. And then the thing that you're downloading. So http://example.com/mybigfile.iso or whatever. And then curl looks at the file, the local file called mybig download or whatever I called it, .iso, finds the byte count, and then resumes downloading the rest of that file from the remote location you've just provided. So you would need to be in the same directory as that file, so that curl, you know, knows, you know, can look at. Because dash dash remote dash name assumes basically that we're downloading it to the current location. So you do need to be in that directory. But other than that, yeah, you're just resuming a download. You can also download a sequence of files. So let's say there are several files called file_1-9.webp. You can do curl http://example.com/file_, and then /.webp-output(file_(1). That number sign one isn't the file name. That is a special curl variable telling curl to substitute number sign one in for the whatever value it finds at the first sort of variable you've created. So file_square(1-9), that's an unknown value. It's anything from 1 to 9, depending on where we are in this loop. So /.output(file_number1) says, hey, whatever loop we're in, put that here, .webp. And of course, like if you had more than one variable thing, like one more than one value that could change, you can use number one, you can use number two, number three, number four, however many variables you need. So imagine something like curl, https://example.com/images_0(0)(9)/file_(1-4)webp. Well, now you've got two square bracket things, right? So then maybe you would want to output them as file_number1-number2.webp. So then you would have all the files from images_0(0)0 to 0(0)9 along with the files 1 through 4 of each. So my point is, whether you followed all of that or not, because it is confusing, my point is that when there's a variable value in your curl command, you can then reference that variable with the sequence hashtag or dollar sign or not dollar sign hashtag or octothorpe or number sign, whatever you call it, and then the number in the order of appearance. It's very, very useful. And the only confusing thing for me is that it is a number sign, not a dollar sign, because in Bash and in Perl, you're just kind of used to the number sign, the dollar sign. In curl, it is a number sign, an octothorpe, a hashtag. Okay, so let's see, what else do we got? Well, we have some interesting ones. You can, of course, because curl is a command, you can chain it together with other commands. That's what makes it kind of so powerful. Like, that's the appeal here. So for instance, let's say that you wanted to download all the episodes, all the opus episodes of GNU World Order, and you know that there's an audio, that there's an archive folder full of all the episodes. We just listed it in a previous experiment. So we'll try that. Let's just curl that page again, or that directory again. So curl quote https://gnuworldorder.info/audio file ph/close quote. Do that and you get a lot of output. We're seeing a lot of relatively ugly output from like a table that's being rendered to list that page. That's a little bit clunky, but we can parse this. And if you look through it, you notice, for instance, that there is an ahref equals quote GNU World Order __episode_opus.opus. That's sort of the pattern for the audio files. So if you wanted to, and I mean, there are easier ways to do this. I've already demonstrated one of them, which was with the variables and the numbers. So I mean, you don't have to do it this way. I probably wouldn't do it this way, but I'm just trying to demonstrate how you can parse output of curl with standard pipeline logic of a shell script. So for whatever reason, let's say you had to do it this way. I don't know why that reason would be, but for some other page, there could be a reason. So now that we know what the output looks like, you can, of course, parse it. So curl, the URL, pipe grep --only-matching. That'll return only the part that you care about, like the part that matches what you're looking for. Single quote, let's just do GNU World Order, camel case, underscore --opus.opus close single quote. See what that returns. Yep, that's well, that was all almost correct. There is some garbage in here, and I'm assuming that's the way that the page is returning some of the information. So we would have to refine this a little bit for episodes 5532, 533, 534, 535 through to 538. Apparently there's something is happening there. I don't actually know what. I'm trying to something about, you know, like not having a line break in it probably, but you could do, you know, you could refine it and then you've got all the names of the episodes and then you would locate where those episodes were and potentially then download all of those files. Like I say, actually, since they're sequential, they have numbers in them. So you could just, you would be better off just downloading GNU World Order _ square bracket, 400 and how far back does this go? 440 for this directory. 440-558 or 559 or 560, whatever episode this is, 560, close square bracket _ opus.opus from that directory. And then you would download them all. So there are still other ways to do it. Again, the point is that because curl just dumps everything into your terminal, or to standard out more accurately, that means that you can combine it with all of the other applications that you need. Okay, on to something a little bit different. Here are some HTTP header things that you can do with curl. This is an important sort of troubleshooting step that you'll run into sometimes if you do a lot of stuff with the internet. You might find that people report errors to you that maybe aren't exactly, they don't sound right, or you're convinced that it's PEBCAC, that's problem exists between keyboard and What does that stand for? Between client and keyboard? Customer and keyboard? I don't know what that stands for all of a sudden. I mean, I thought I knew what it stood for. Anyway, you think it's their problem. They think it's your problem. Well, if you do curl --head, https://example.com, then you're downloading not the web page, but the response that you get from a basic HTTP get a call to a web server. And that tells, in this case, curl --head example.com tells me that http://2/200. So that returned the response code of 200, which if I go to just an internet search engine, HTTP response 200, what does it mean? It'll tell me that 200 means that it's okay, according to Mozilla, developer.mozilla.org, a relatively reliable authority on the internet. 200 is okay. You may have come across other ones like 404, not found, those kinds of response codes. Those are all listed on MDN, developer.mozilla.org. If you go there and look up HTTP response status codes, you get a big long list of them. Some you see more often than others. 301 moved permanently, you'll see that. 404 not found, obviously. 500 gateway not, or internal server error is that one, sorry. 502 is the bad gateway, and so on. Anyway, if you get that kind of response from curl, then you can kind of surmise that, yeah, maybe there is a problem on the server. Maybe it isn't just the user's configurations or cookies or all the things that go wrong with, you know, typical networks and web browsers. You can also opt to fail early. --fail-early helps curl sort of get out of a bad negotiation that could sometimes take a lot longer than you're willing to wait. So fail early just like reduces the timeouts on all the, you know, sort of common interactions. When parsing these, or when you see one of these errors, like the less bad errors, I guess, sometimes you can see like the 300 series of responses are sort of, they're not bad. They're just letting you know what's going on. Like they're not 200 okay, but they're not 400 or 500 either. So the 300's like the 301 redirect. That's a thing that has moved permanently. And you can see this for yourself, as it happens on IANA.org, kind of a well-known organization for the internet. So if you curl, quote, https://iana.org, close quote, pipe grep title, then you see that the title of this page is 301 moved permanently. So this page, the index page of that, whatever it is, of the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority, IANA, has apparently moved permanently. Now, you can force curl to follow that 301, the moved page. Like, you can follow where the 301 is pointing to with the dash dash location. And then if you do, for instance, curl dash dash location, quote, https://iana.org, close quote, pipe grep title, you get back in return. Actually, you know what? I'm going to also add the silent flag on here because that's way too much output. There we go. There's the title, Internet Assigned Numbers Authority. And I'm sure that if I viewed the whole page, there would actually be a full page there. So 301, happily, luckily, curl doesn't just go wherever a 301 tells it to go. It just tells you, hey, I've encountered a 301. Move permanently. Well, that doesn't do you like any good if you're just trying to download the page. So if you're just going to iana.org because you want to see the contents of iana.org, then the 301 move permanently notice is not what you want. So dash dash location tells curl to follow all the HTTP code prompts and go to the location of, you know, resolve the symlinks, as it were. It's not a symlink, it's a 301. It could be a symlink, but I mean, not in HTTP language. So that'll get you to where where you mean to go. And interestingly, you can use this as kind of a resolver for those, you know, those, I don't really see them as much anymore as I used to, but you know, those websites that shorten URLs. They used to be like a dime a dozen. There was like Tiny URL and Bitly and all those other things. Bitly still exists. So do try this one: curl dash dash head dash dash location quote https://bit.ly/2y D y S 4 T close quote. Does that show you the location? It's not super obvious at first. If you look through the head information, you'll see that, first of all, server nginx, location, http://example.com. Referrer policy, unsafe URL. Anything else in here interesting? Well, certainly that it's a 301. It confirms that it's a 301 because that's how those things are generated. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, it's going through Google, it says, via 1.1 Google. I don't really know what that means, but it's what it's doing. The domain is bit.ly. It expires September 28th of 2024. So try this before September 28th, 2024 to see the magic of Bitly, or just generate your own Bitly and try it there. But yeah, so if you ever see one of those shortened URLs or a URL that, I don't know, seems suspicious or something, you could do curl dash dash head dash dash location and just look at what curl tells you. Okay, believe it or not, there is yet more that curl can do. Curl, because it's again, it's just a way to talk to URLs. Like, that's what it does over a network. So you can use curl, and many people use it for this reason, to test an API. So for instance, if you have a service that is, you know, is essentially an application running on the web, which is pretty common these days, you can, you know, an application on the web very frequently, like the model is, generate a URL, and then something will go to that URL to trigger an action. It's almost as if, though, the URL is the button in a weird way. You know, like if you think of an application that's open on your computer, to you click OK to sort of finalize the interaction. Well, on an API, there's no button. It's just like a server running, listening for signals. And so if there's a you know, sometimes there's a, it'll make something available. And if you go to that point, then you get the data that you expect or that you're anticipating. So for instance, if you go to, that's not going to work. I just tried to paste something into a browser. Curl quote https://gitlab.com/API. So that's a good indication that they have an API running. /v4, that's version 4 of their API, /projects. And then I guess pipe it through less because it's a bit of information that you're about to get. And then press return. You get some JSON, some JavaScript, sort of a list within in like JavaScript notation, basically. I mean, it's JSON. And this is a list of all the, I think, like the recent projects created on GitLab. This is a perfectly legitimate use of their API, of their website. This is just literally the projects that have been created today so far, and I assume it rotates out eventually. I mean, you know, because I'm sure probably lots of projects are being created every moment, but that this is a list of, let's say, the, I don't know, I'm guessing 25 most recent projects created on GitLab. And maybe there's a website, there's probably like a web page on GitLab that has these listed, you know, as kind of a scrolling panel, probably like, look at how, you know, how fast people are creating stuff on our website because we're so great. I mean, I don't know, I'm making stuff up. I do use GitLab, but I don't like hang out on GitLab's website to see what's going on. I just go there to my profile. So, you know, you're getting information that you would probably otherwise get from their web page or from their website, but you're getting it through the API that they make available. So again, this isn't like abusing GitLab's service. This is an API that they have available to users, and you can query it. You can send other stuff through curl as well. The man page is full of information that you can send along with a curl command. So let's say that you wanted to fill a form out. curl --form, quote, username equals clatu, close quote, --form, quote, password equals my terrible password 123, close quote, and then say, you know, quote, https://example.com/api/my login, close quote, something like that. That doesn't exist. But you can see, kind of imagine seeing a login form, and curl can, as long as, you know, the field names need to be accurate. You can't just say, hey, here's the username, if the form calls its little username box name or user, not username. So you have to do a little bit of due diligence and understand the code of the site that you're communicating with, but it is possible. The other way to pass information into a form is by concatenating a text file on your machine, so you don't have to actually type out, you know, your username and your password, certainly, to just be right there in your shell script or your shell history. You could also do like curl --form, quote, password equals, and then redirect symbol, that's the less than symbol in this case, myauth.txt, close quote, and then the endpoint URL. You can also send an entire file. Like, let's say that there's a form that wants you to upload, you know, an avatar picture of yourself. So that could be something like curl --form, quote, avatar equals, and then you use the at notation to upload a blob. So you're not concatenating like myphoto.jpg. You're sending myphoto.jpg as a binary blob. So that's at myphoto.jpg, which presumably in this scenario would be in your current directory, close quote, and then the URL of the endpoint that you're sending it to. Now, in real life, it's relatively unlikely that there's a website out there these days that is just going to let you upload something without like a username and a password. And curl, because it doesn't have, you know, it isn't a web, it's non-interactive. So you can log in to a website and be logged in for a moment, but once curl stops running, you are no longer logged in. So every command you want to include in your curl interaction, you need to include, you know, within your curl data. And that's not a step-by-step process. So you can't do curl dash dash form quote username equals clat2 close quote dash dash form quote password equals 123456789 close quote dash dash form quote avatar equals at clat2.jpg close quote URL of endpoint. That wouldn't work unless some for some weird reason the form literally is just a username, a password, and a place to upload your avatar. That's not usually how they come, though. Usually you have to log in with your username and your password, and then you go to some other URL and click a button to upload your avatar and so on. So what's more likely to happen is that from some web app, you get a login token that you can use as your authentication without any other interaction. And then sometimes you can post your whatever data you want to post using that token. But the application really does have to be designed for that. It is not something that you can generally do just as sort of a you can script curl, but you can't script like how the website interacts with curl. And a good, I guess, positive example of this is how Mastodon is, or at least was last time I checked, which hasn't been for a while, but it is designed, I'm pretty sure, for pretty darned good API interactions, honestly. So you do have to go into Mastodon itself and sort of activate the API, or the API is active, I guess, but you have to get a token, an authorization token for yourself, a developer token or a developer key, whatever they call it. Once you have that, though, you can do like curl dash dash header, quote, authorization colon bearer, and then the key token, the developer key, which is a big long string of numbers and letters, and then the endpoint of the API, and then dash dash form quote status equals this is my post to Mastodon from curl close quote, and then the endpoint to the API function that lets you post a status. See, so when you're using curl with an API, you're not using curl to interact with, like, you know, sort of blindly with a website as if though you were sitting there clicking on buttons. The buttons are the URLs. And if the web app hasn't created that URL, then that button doesn't exist. So in your mind, you might picture Mastodon with like the post, the little text box where you put your status on the left of the screen, and there's a little button post, you know, or okay, whatever it says. And you click that, and it posts your little message to Mastodon. That's not what you're doing with an API, though. With an API, you have to know, and you would know by reading the documentation for Mastodon's API, you have to know that there's a button or a function, really, called statuses at mastodon.xyz or whatever your Mastodon instance is, /API/v1/statuses. But the way that you interact with that URL is by giving the API what it needs. The function needs certain information from you, and that includes it needs to see authorization from you in your message header, and it needs to see a form with at least the contents of a status equals some text by you. So using an API using curl entirely is kind of a different way of sort of thinking about interacting with the web, because you're not interacting with the literal page. You are interacting with functions. Now, interestingly, the pages are often expressions of that function, but that isn't the function. That's just one way to interact with the function. There's a GUI page. The other way is to use something like curl and just send the desired input to those functions. And I guess that's the thing about curl to kind of take away from this big just sort of info dump of like, here's all the stuff you can do with curl. The thing to remember is that probably curl has like an option to specify a, you know, the the thing that you need for a specific protocol. It's just frustratingly, I guess, you need to know what that protocol wants, and you need to know what the server wants from you, because you can't just send random stuff to places and hope that they, you know, respond. It's just not how computers work, really. So, you know, I mean, some APIs, for instance, require a specific kind of HTTP request. Well, you can specify that curl --request, post or get, all capitals. You just have to know what that API or what the server, even if it's not an API, what it needs from you to continue to do the thing that you want to do. And it does differ. I mean, it really does. It's up to the person who wrote the software on the server that you want to interact with, and whether they even tell you what that is or not, or, you know, whether you just have to look through view source and look through all the code yourself. It really does depend. It depends partly on whether the person, you know, whether that server sort of expects you to interact with it in a, I guess, what we have to call a non-standard way, right? Like if a million people are going to a website by opening their Chrome branded web browser and clicking on buttons, then that's the standard way of interacting with it. So if you are then trying to do something just with curl, that is a non-standard way by comparison. Doesn't mean it's the wrong way, doesn't mean it's a bad way, doesn't mean it's a malicious way. It just means that it's not the way that most people are doing it. So a website might not advertise what it needs from you in order to log into their site, or it may not provide developer tokens, and so on. So it can be tricky. I think one good experience with curl can kind of convince you that it can do anything with any website. And while strictly, I guess that's somewhat true, it's also a little bit misleading. It's not always like, oh, all I have to do is pass this and this and this, and then I'm in and doing the things that I want. It really depends on what kind of site it is, what the developer has expected you to require, and how you're using curl. But there are libraries around curl. There's PyCurl, there's libcurl, there's curl, and so there are sometimes other ways to kind of interact with something, but a lot of times it's like using a sonar in a submarine. You know, it's just like you're making a call out and seeing what you get back, and then trying to figure out what to do with that information. Unless, of course, there's documentation where it's just like, hey, this is the API, here's our functions, here's how to talk to them, have fun. And that's a great experience. So if you can go to some site that expects you to use curl, or you know, kind of expects you to be messing around with the API, then that's brilliant to learn on. Mastodon is really great for that, except one little thing is many owners of Mastodon, many maintainers of Mastodon don't want bot traffic. And so if they see you logging into your account with curl, they think you are a bot and might ban you. So Mastodon is good if you're running your own instance, or if you're on one of the rare instances that allows bots. Good luck finding those. GitLab is really good to mess around with an API. They've got an API. GitHub has an API. So I think, of course they do, right? They would have to. Anyway, lots of places have APIs that they expect you to use sort of quote-unquote non-standard tools with, or, you know, programmatic tools with. You just have to find them, and then you can mess around with curl and kind of get a hang for how to talk to things, services online. But you can also just use curl to browse the internet and get files in mass and so on. Now, a couple of episodes ago, I asked you, dear listeners, for your favorite curl commands and how you use curl. Got some responses. First one is from OXO. OXO? OXO? OXO sent me the curl, so curl --O, which is the short version of --remote name. https://example.com/myfile.iso --C for continuing, and then dash, and then -O for output, file.location.txt_ part, or rather in my example, sorry, it would be myfile.iso underscore part. And so this continues a partial download. That's a nice little tip right there, because I've never specified the file. I've always let curl auto detect the file in your current directory. So knowing how to specify, hey, I want you to continue the download of this and send it into this file seems very useful. OXO also says that curl is good for downloading an ISO, and then in this variation, you could immediately send the ISO data that you are downloading to a device, like your USB drive, like a USB thumb drive that you're imaging with the ISO. Now, obviously, this ISO would have to be the kind of ISO that you can just image to a USB device. Not all of them are like that, so you'd want to check with your distribution to make sure that that's a thing that it supports. But the command is curl dash capital O. Again, that's the short version of dash dash remote dash name. And then, mirror.com/example.com/mirror/ arch linux dot ISO pipe sudo ddof for output file. What does OF stand for? Probably output file. Out file equals /dev/sdx, SDX being the USB thumb drive that you have verified that is attached to your computer and attached or mounted at or rather located at dev SDX, not mounted. Okay, so those are really good. Those are super useful. But OXO also sent me a link to a Codeberg document that is just literally hundreds of lines of commands. And it's an amazing document. It's one of those documents. It's like, it's a cheat sheet, right? I mean, it's a document where you put all of the things that you use, maybe not often enough to remember it off the top of your head, or maybe it's just a cool thing, at the time that you learned and you don't want to forget it. Whatever is just, it's literally like 300 plus lines of, no, 400, 500, almost 600 lines of just, it's a bash reference sheet, really, with a bunch of different commands. It's a really, really cool document. I will include the link in the show notes because it's just really, really useful. I mean, a lot of these commands you'll look at and you'll think, oh yeah, I learned that years ago. And other ones you'll be like, I'll never use that. And then you'll see one and you're like, you'll think, oh my gosh, I need that command in my life. So here's one, curl-4https://ident.me. Let's try that together. I mean, I know what it's going to do, but it's useful to do it in real time. So https://ident.me has curl-4, goes out to the internet and returns my IP address and IP version 4 IP address. Easy as that. What a great little command. I don't use that one myself. I use curl icanhasip.com. For some reason, that's the one I remember. Yeah, I know there are lots of others, but the one that I remember is icanhasip.com, and it is pretty fast too. So that's kind of nice, I guess. So that's a nice little one to have because you always need your external IP address for something when you least expect it, and curl is just one of the fastest ways to get it. You can go to your web browser and probably type in ident.me, or at least you can for ICANN. Yep, there it is. There's the IP address. But I mean, suppose you're in a terminal and you don't want to open a browser. Well, you have curl, which, as I've said, is basically an internet browser. What other curl command did I say? I thought there was one other that I thought was kind of useful. No, I think I covered all of them. Yeah, I did. It looks like I covered all of the ones that I haven't. Oh no, here it is. Curl and then like a link to a PDF pipe and then your favorite PDF viewer. Now I don't know. I have not tried this myself, to be honest. I don't even know where do you find PDFs online? I don't know. PDF, here's one. Yep, okay. I'm going to try to curl this PDF, curl quote link to PDF pipe to Ocular. I'm just going to see if that works. Does Ocular take, doesn't look like it takes a PDF from the internet. And I don't have Zathura, and I'm not going to try. I'm not going to install Zathura. What about XPDF? That seems like the kind of application that could handle this kind of wacky... Nope, doesn't look like it. These are not loaded. Loading. So I guess that's not working. But apparently Zathura is a PDF viewer. I had to look it up. I didn't know what it was. And I guess, according to OXO, I guess it'll take input from a pipe, which is amazing. That's really cool. So curl is a very cool command, as you can tell. There are a lot of weird uses for it. And I say weird by meaning... that there are uses for them that I guess a lot of people don't quite understand why you would need that or why you would want that. I mean, even something like curl-4 identme. To a lot of people, that might seem unnecessary. Like, why do you need curl and a terminal just to get your external IP address? Surely you could just open up a web browser and get your IP address that way. And that's the kind of sort of, may I politely say, sort of inverse thinking that I think a lot of computer users, we can fall into it. We can say, well, why are you doing... I mean, certainly if you go to computer forums online, if you go to a technical help type forum online and ask a question about, I want to do this thing, how can I do that? You're almost guaranteed to get a response from somebody about, like, why would you want to do that? And that's, as I think I've probably said on the show before, that's my least favorite question or response, rather, because the why is so frequently irrelevant. Maybe the what are you trying to achieve? That's a good question. Like, what are you trying to do? You're asking about downloading a PDF from a terminal and piping it into a PDF viewer. What are you trying to achieve? Well, I'm trying to achieve, I want to download a PDF without opening my web browser, but I want to view the PDF in a GUI. That's a valid question because it gathers more information and context about what the goal is, because maybe the goal can be achieved through some other means and you don't care about the means as long as it doesn't involve this or that. So that's a perfectly valid, but why? It shouldn't matter, right? I'm here on the internet and I'm asking a question. If you don't have the answer, then don't respond, and certainly don't respond asking me why I want to do something. Why would you want to do that? Don't worry about it. Either answer the question or do not respond. Either is fine, but that's it. So curl is very cool, and there are a lot of uses in here that I think might inspire some people to say, well, why would you want to do that? And again, why, it doesn't actually matter. For whatever reason you want to do something, that's fine. And amazingly, curl just might be the way to do it. Thanks for listening. My name's Klaatu. You can reach me anytime over email with feedback or comments, tips, or just to say hi. My email address is klaatu@slackermedia.info. You can also reach me on the Mastodon network, not Klaatu, at mastodon.xyz. The show's intro and outro music is by Fat Chance Lester. You can find their music on bandcamp.com or on gnuworldorder.info. In the archive, you'll find a music directory containing the album from which this music has been extracted. Until next time, thanks for listening, and keep the source open.